You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, and this is the Play Therapy Podcast. In today's episode, we are doing the final increment of a six-part series. So this is part six of a talk that I gave at the Florida Association for Play Therapy's conference last weekend. If you've missed any other episodes in this six-part series, you can find them on the website. You can also find my slides that go over the entire 3 hours presentation as well as the overview at playtherapypodcast.com/FAPT, as in Florida Association for Play Therapy. All the episodes will be archived there. You can also access the slides. In today's episode, we are talking through the child-centered play therapy timeline. So what it actually looks like week to week in the playroom as children progress through the child-centered model. I hope you enjoy. Foundations of play therapy are core beliefs, philosophy. Those influence the whole process. Our applications, that's what we're actually doing to make those philosophical beliefs evident to the child. And then our four pillars are actually the techniques of interaction in the sessions. I don't want y'all to miss the importance of helping parents do this at home. So when you meet with parents, when you have your consultations, when you're bringing them into the fray and the process and getting them on board and all of that, you want to give them pieces of all three of these components. You want to give them core beliefs and philosophy. You want to give them practical applications, and then you want to give them skills and techniques. Ideally in that order, and way less jargony and way more parent-friendly. Right? So you have to hone your craft of how you communicate these things to parents. I was actually just having, in our little break, we were talking, and D. Ray stresses that a lot, that how you present to parents makes or breaks the whole thing. So you, now that you know, with great knowledge comes great responsibility, right? So you know this stuff now. It's not enough to know it and use it. You have to help parents get it, because we get them an hour a week. Parents are with them dozens of hours a week. If they're not on board, we can only get a child so far. I talk all the time that kids start here, parents want them here. I can move them towards center line, but parents always have to move from their direction towards center line too. It is not a unilateral change within a family. Kid can work and work and work and make progress and grow and heal. There's all this amazing stuff going on. Parents have to come from the other direction and meet them. You know, the legal scales of justice, a lot of lawyers use them in their logos. It's like the floating scales and it looks like it balances. I use that picture with parents all the time. I say, look, there's a natural equilibrium that is found. The child-centered model helps to balance out the highs and the lows, and it kind of just evens things out. But think about it, the natural homeostasis in the family, when a child starts to change, they add a pebble to their side, or they take a pebble away from their side. What by default happens on the other side of the scale? It has to recalibrate. Change cannot happen within a family unit just from one person. So it's our job to help them get this, because we can help the child, but the child's work can only go so far. Parents have to come from the other side. So we have to help them get it. What are the foundations? Why do we do what we do? This is why I believe eclecticism is the death of our profession. If you don't know who you are, if you don't know what you believe, if you don't have an undergirding of what you're doing in the playroom, and it's always forever the same. We are so scripted at our center. We say the same things when we greet kids. We say the same things when they wash their hands. We say the same things when we give them snacks. We set limits the same way. We give choices the same way. They know the routine. Why? Because we are child-centered, non-directive play therapists. A kid can be having a terrible day. I don't change what I do with them. They're having a great day. I don't change what I do with them. It is the same. Why? Because I am a child-centered play therapist. You have to have your foundation. And like I said, I would love all of you to fully buy into child-centered. But if you say, you know what, I actually feel like I'm Adlerian, I feel like I'm Jungian, I feel like I'm whatever, then dive into that and be that. But child-centered gives you the ability to help parents, help kids, and know exactly where you're going. Because why? Are we in charge in a child-centered model? We trust the child to do the work that they need to do, no matter what the work is. I don't have to have an agenda. I don't have to be directive. I don't have to force a kid to do anything. They heal themselves if you give them the time, the tools, and the opportunity. But parents have to get that, because here's what happens. I told them they need to talk to you about what happened at school today. I've told you 1,000 times they don't have to talk to me about anything. And there's always an agenda with parents. And what do I say every time a parent says that to me, usually in front of the child in the lobby as I'm ready to walk back, which they also know is a huge no-no. I say all the time, we do not talk about kids in front of kids. End of story, no grace, no questions. I will not talk about your child in front of your child. Do not think you're going to pull me aside in the lobby. Do not think you're going to go, I just got to tell you this one thing. We have consultations for that. Email me, text me, call me, or set up a consultation. Not in front of the kid, but they try because they have an agenda, right? So they've got to tell you. I've actually had kids say to me, my mom and dad so-and-so told me that if I don't talk to you about what's going on, I'm not going to be able to come play with you anymore. That is not this. This is, you know what you need, you know your pace, you know what you're ready to handle, you know what you need to do. I give you the reins. Let's do it. I'm with you on the journey. I'm the guide rail. I'm the support. I've got the techniques, I've got the skills, but this is you. You don't have to tell me anything. And I usually say to parents, well, he can choose to play or he can choose to talk. This is his time. And then we walk off down the hallway because I'm like, don't force your kid to do anything. Trust me, trust the process, and trust your kid. That needs to become your tagline. Every time you meet with parents, it's a game changer. I say, you need to trust me, you need to trust your child, and you need to trust the process. Because the process is the why, the how, and the what. That's all we need. Playroom, kid, me, and that. That's all we need. So you've got to get them to buy in, and you've got to get them to get this. So figure out how you're going to say it, what you want to say, how you'd like to approach it, but that is really how the whole process works the best. Make sense? Yes.
Do you start that process with the parents at the intake or consultation, explain that this is?
I actually schedule a consult before they even come in for the first appointment. So adults only meeting before the child comes for the first visit.
And you just go over all of this?
I go over all of it. And even when you set expectations, they still try to circumvent the system, but you've at least given them, here's what we're doing, here's why, here's where we're going, and here are the expectations.
Do you ever have any parents say, this isn't for me, this is what I'm looking for my child, and leave?
Not leave. I've had them say that. Okay. And then it's my job to help them understand why what they think they need is not what they need. And so then I say, well, so let me explain why this approach is actually going to work. Well, no, I didn't realize this. I want talk therapy for my 8-year-old. I want CBT for my 6-year-old. Okay, so kids aren't rational. Kids don't have abstract reasoning. And then you have to educate them. When you have to get a parent to buy in, they need to understand philosophically why this is what they need. They just don't know that they need it. I've never had someone walk out and say, never mind, but you do have, look, we didn't go to school to be salespeople, but play therapy requires you to be a really good salesperson, because this is like hullabaloo to most people. They're like, what do you mean you're just going to play with my kid? Like, I'll just let them play at home. No, let me help you understand, right? And that's what this is going to do for you. All right? So I really want to finish with, good grief. Okay, so this child-centered play therapy timeline. This is really incredible to me. Hendrix, in the 70s, see, this belief that like play therapy is this new fandangled, like, oh, this is like, you know, the newest thing to hit the therapy world. No, been around for a really long time. This came in from 71, and I want y'all to understand, yes, you needed everything from that last slide, but this helps you understand where a child's going to be and therefore what skills are going to be most needed throughout the process, okay? So the first four sessions, actually, let me pause before I get there. When I present play therapy to parents, when I give them expectations, I tell them that the average nationwide is 20 weeks. So with most children in most scenarios, 20 weeks is enough time for them to work through what they came in for, okay? So I always kind of pose a 20-week model just so that parents have an idea, because that's the first question, right? Well, I mean, how many are they gonna need? You haven't even met the kid, right? They're like, they're there for the consultation. They're like, well, how many sessions is this gonna take? Well, the average nationwide is about 20 weeks. And I break that down into four phases for them so they understand what to expect, right? So you have initiation phase, you have resistance phase, you have work phase, and you have termination phase, okay? So I help them understand big picture journey of therapy. We have to build rapport, they're going to resist, then they dive into the work, then we wrap up, right? So that's the picture, big 10,000 foot view for parents. I like this because this is the clinical side of what's going on. What I just shared with you is what parents need to know. Look, we have to build rapport. We have to build a relationship. We have to figure out how this is going to work. Then they're going to have this crossroads where they're like, do I really want to deal with my junk? Am I really ready for this? Can I really handle this? This is scary. This feels terrible. This is yucky. I'm walking through this muck and mire. Do I really want to do this? And often they don't. So they fight, right? Parents need to know that. How do we handle attrition in play therapy? We set expectations so parents aren't surprised. Especially in child-centered. Child-centered has gotten a bad name for being long and there's no measurable outcomes, there's no treatment planning, there's no, this is the prescribed way we're going to get better. That's all hogwash. But in the therapy world, we have the name for being the slow kind of willy-nilly approach, okay? Parents need to know your kid might get worse before they get better. Because when they start dealing with their junk, it brings up a whole bunch of stuff, and that's yucky. So when you go to therapy and you feel like crap after you have a really tough session, like, yeah, that's what happens for your kid too. So we set expectations so they know, right? Because when they get worse, if you haven't had that conversation with them, if you haven't talked about resistance, this isn't working, I'm out. And they bail. And then they go to talk therapy because they think that's going to help. The reality is, it's a process. Trust me, trust your kid, trust the process, right? So big picture, initiation, work, initiation, resistance, work, termination. That's what parents need to know. This is what you need to know. First four sessions, they're going to express curiosity. They'll engage in exploratory, non-committal, and creative play. They will make descriptive and informative comments, and they exhibit happiness and anxiety. Standard expectation of the first four sessions, which coincides with initiation phase. They don't know you. They don't know what the process is like. They don't know what to do. The toys are new. They're going to check it out. They're going to explore. They're going to see what stuff does. That all aligns with that. Okay? Then sessions 5 through 8, they continue with their play themes, but then their generalized aggressive themes increase. You ever had a kid in the, I call it the honeymoon phase. The first few weeks, they're like so calm and so sweet, and they're just like, oh, what does this do? And then like round 5 or so, 6 weeks, they come in and they're like, bah! And you're just like, oh my gosh, why? Because they're past the initiation phase, their aggression is going to increase. It's a standard process. When you get into child-centered play therapy, things don't really surprise you. You're going to have the same basic themes. You're going to have the same basic reasons parents bring them in. You're going to have the same basic process in the session. And here's why I'm kind of opposed to other directive approaches. Because directive approaches are, oh, you're having an aggressive day, we're going to deal with your aggression. Oh, you're having a happy day, we're going to focus on... There is a process. You don't have to change based on where the child is at any given moment. This is the process, and they will go through it as all other kids in child-centered play therapy do. They will also continue to express happiness and anxiety, but then spontaneous actions are evident. You ever have kids that, like, you think that they're kind of one personality, and then 6, 7 sessions in, you're like, whoa, what is going on? Like, they just, like, spontaneously do something, and you're like, I did not expect that. It's part of the process. They feel comfortable, they start to get it, they start to feel less inhibited, they start to feel more spontaneous, all part of the process. Sessions 9 through 12, their exploratory, non-committal, and aggressive play decreases. Why? Resistance phase is over, and they've already worked through a lot of that junk. Relationship play increases. You ever notice how a kid will play individually for weeks and weeks and weeks, and all of a sudden they'll be like, Miss Brenna, come over and blah, blah, blah. Huge moment. Why? They're inviting you in, and it becomes collaborative play, and it's relationship. They also start to play about their moms, their dads, their siblings, their friends, their school, their teacher. Relationship play comes in. Why? Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I can't deal with relationships when I've got all this other junk down here that has to be addressed first. So this is later. Creative play and happiness are predominant. My favorite time of therapy is like weeks 12 to 15. Because almost always, kids are happy, they're calm, they're like, let's make something out of Legos. Where the first 5 weeks, I was like dodging things and like holding my folder up to protect myself. And they go from chaotic craziness to let's just play a game. Let's work on a puzzle. Let's do something. Why? Because relationship play is there and they're happy and they're creative. They non-verbally check in with the therapist. You ever had those moments when a kid's doing something? They're calm, they're kind of quiet, they're in control, and you just see them look up at you, and they make eye contact with you. Nonverbal check-in. Why? The relationship matters. Are you here? Are you hearing me? Are you understanding? Are you caring? Are you delighting in me? Just making sure. Nonverbal check-ins. Eye contact. They look. They want to make sure you're watching. They want to make sure you're paying attention. And more about their family and their self is given. Self-disclosure. It is one of my favorite weeks when a kid out of the blue goes, you want to know what happened at school today? You want to know what happened on the bus? When I went to this soccer game this weekend, I scored a goal and this happened. They're letting me into their world. You want to know why that's significant? Kids are with me an hour a week. Kids are with all of us an hour a week. Life in the playroom, it can stay very closed off, and I only get life in the playroom with a kid. But when we get to this era of the treatment process, I want you in the rest of my life. I want you to know what's happening at school. I want you to know what's happening at soccer. I want you to know what's happening on the bus. This isn't just about my time with you in the playroom. This is about you being in my life. This is about you being in my world. Because the relationship, they get it now. We've always had the relationship at the forefront of everything. They're there now. Make sense? Okay, sessions 13 through 16. Creative and relationship play predominates. So you ever notice how art is usually a later theme? Like when you work with kids, you usually see a lot of other stuff first, and then out of the blue, they start getting the musical instruments out, or they start saying, I want to paint. Or art usually comes later because it takes creativity. Creativity is dampened by internal junk. It's similar to like you don't sing or hum when you're really stressed. When's the last time you were like bogged down, overwhelmed with stuff, and you just find yourself whistling or humming? Never. Because there's a hierarchy. Your brain can only attend to so much at once. Creativity requires inhibitions lessened and just like feeling calm and being happy and feeling at peace. So you get creative in relationship play, 13 through 16. Specific aggressive play increases later in sessions. Have you ever like had massive aggression at the beginning and then it just goes away and you're like, wow, they've resolved that. And then out of the blue, it like pops back up again and you're like, whoa, what is going on? Where did that come from? I used to go, okay, so what's going on in the child's life? Like there's got to be some, it's because they're revisiting the default that they had before. I tell parents this all the time. Implementing new skills, new growth, new change, it requires so much work. And they have to learn, I used to default to that. It's easy, it's my go-to. I'm gonna try it again and see what happens. And then they go, that doesn't serve me like it used to. It doesn't do the same thing for me that it used to. But they have to go back to test the theory, right? And so they'll go back to aggressive play and then go, actually, yeah, I don't need to do that anymore. And you can watch it happen. It's fantastic. And then big emotions come out. Because remember, emotions are where they live, but they usually only attend to a few at a time. So you get a broader range of emotion later in treatment. Two more. 17 through 20, dramatic and role play comes in. So often you really get fun puppet shows, fun dialogue, like that's usually when you get the role play and the dramatic play. The aggression continues, but they continue to increase their relationship with the therapist. Happiness is always predominant, and they continue to reveal information about their self and their family. So as you can see, everything is kind of tapering toward where we want them to be. And then finally, 21 through 24, relationship play, dramatic play, and role play are at the tail end, and incidental play increases when you're at the very end. Obviously, that's if you take a child longer than 20 weeks. Often we don't, but that's usually what happens at the very tail end. So thoughts or questions on the timeline? Yes, so that's actually a really helpful question. Little ones don't know to resist. They don't fight it. They don't think. They just feel and do. So everything is usually faster and more condensed the younger they are. Because they're not resisting. They're not thinking. They're not processing. It's just what they need to do, they do it, and everything is a faster process for them. And I usually tell parents that too. When I get little ones, 2.5, 3, 4, I almost always tell them, I'm giving you a 20-week model because that's the average, but little ones don't know to fight it, so it just goes faster.
I have one last question about, yeah. Because the relationship is so important, would you do anything specifically to terminate? Because, I mean, you've spent 24 weeks.
Yes, so that's why I say I share those four phases with parents. I spend probably upwards of 10 minutes talking about how important the termination phase is. Because when everything is great, when parents are happy, when the kid is happy, when I'm happy, they're like, great, see you later, and they bail. And I'm like, oh my gosh, hold the phone, no. So I always say, look, Kids need happy goodbyes. They need healthy goodbyes. We need to celebrate the work that was done. We need to, so we have a whole countdown. We say, I'm going to see you 3 more times. I'm going to see you 2 more times. I'm going to see you 1 more time. The final week we celebrate, we give them a certificate. It becomes like a, we're celebrating all the fun, all the work, all the accomplishment. And I make that known from the get-go. You will not think that we've made progress and ditch. Like, we will have a wrap-up process for the child. That's a non-negotiable for us. So here's how you can get more information from me. The Play Therapy Podcast is the new one for clinicians. Play Therapy Parenting Podcast is for parents, but a ton of my therapists actually listen to that one as well. So some of you I know already subscribed, but that is one way to get a hold of me. Here's my contact info. So if you want to follow up, if you have questions, if you have comments, if after your brain settles and you are like, oh my gosh, I just need to have some support, please email me. I'm not saying this tritely, I love interacting and supporting and training and helping. So I'm available. I'd love for you to do that. The slides for this presentation are available at playtherapypodcast.com/FAPT. So the whole presentation, you can access that there. And there are the references that I used. So Bratton and Landreth is CPRT. Cochran, Nordling, Cochran, child-centered play therapy. Hendricks is the timeline that I mentioned. The Art of the Relationship. If you have not read The Art of the Relationship, please buy it. Please read it. It's amazing. And then Van Fleet's book, Child-Centered Play Therapy, also really helpful. So thoughts, comments, questions? All right, thank you all so much. I'm so glad that you were here, and reach out. I'm happy to help, and this was so much fun. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.